Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Australian Bitcoin Podcast. I'm Justin, your host for this episode. At the time of this recording, Bitcoin's block height is at 727,375, and Bitcoin price in Australian dollars is 55,330. Today's episode will focus on Bitcoin wallet options, particularly desktop and mobile wallets. It won't focus as much on hardware wallets, as that's already been covered in a previous episode. And to help me out today, I've got Daniel from hardblock.com.au, Australia's first and oldest Bitcoin-only exchange. How's it going?
Yeah, good. How are you, Justin?
Pretty good, thank you. Yeah, it's good to have you here. So I want to maybe just put out a couple of definitions that we covered in our last podcast around hardware wallets, and it also became a bit of a tangential podcast around passphrases. So we won't cover that as much in this episode, but I want to just put out a few definitions just to clarify things for users. So if you hear of a cold wallet, that's a wallet that's never been online before. Hardware wallets often aim to be a cold wallet by having an air gap or a secure element, but they're not always cold wallets. However, a hardware wallet would be considered more secure than the alternative, which I'll explain in just a second. They're considered more secure because they're more protected from remote attacks. So waking up in the morning, checking your Bitcoin balance and it all being gone, that's highly, highly unlikely with a hardware wallet. And especially with a hardware wallet that is also a cold wallet. The other thing here that we will talk about today is hot wallets. So hot wallets mean that the seed or the wallet itself has connected to the internet. And the wallets that we talk about today, mobile and desktop wallets, a lot of them are going to be used as hot wallets, but it's also useful to recognize that most mobile and desktop wallets are also able to be integrated or used with a hardware wallet. So they can be used in a cold fashion too. So hopefully that clarifies things a little bit. Just to say again, cold wallet, never been online. Hot wallet has been online. Hardware wallet can be cold or hot, really, and as can mobile and desktop wallets. Now, might as well kick it off with desktop wallets. I've tried to choose a few that we can talk about that are based on Windows, Mac, and Linux. That way, whatever we discuss, people are able to get. But, you know, a bit of a free-for-all, we can talk about any desktop wallets that we've used that could be useful as well. So we don't need to do this in too orderly of a fashion. Is there any wallets that you wanted to bring up, Daniel?
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe we can start with Bitcoin Co., which is obviously was the first Bitcoin wallet, and it is a full node, the backbone of a Bitcoin network. Mm. So, what do you have to say about Bitcoin Co?
Yeah, I like Bitcoin Co. I used it a very long time ago. I haven't used it at all recently. And I do think as a like functionality of a wallet, it's got the bare basics, which is sort of less than what I need now. But for someone new that's getting into Bitcoin, that just wants a really basic wallet, I think it's perfect for that. And if someone also wants to run a node that's linked to their wallet, Bitcoin Core makes that super easy because it's an all-in-one package. And the other things that I like about it, and you'll probably hear me talk about this with most wallets, of course, is that it's free and open source software. Very beginner friendly, like I mentioned. It does have some more advanced features like coin control, which lets you choose the UTXOs that you want to spend. And it'll often let you label them as well, so you can make it clear where that UTXO came from or what you might want to use it for in future.
Yeah, so like Justin said, Bitcoin Core, it's the original wallet that Satoshi released in 2009, and there's been improvements on it ever since. And it can be divided into two parts, really. The user end part, which is just like a wallet, but you add on the back end, it's got the actual Bitcoin full node code, which is basically what Bitcoin is. So it is so when you're running it, you're running a full node, and all full nodes really run Bitcoin Core in the background, the API. So it's kind of a bit special compared to the other wallets. Most of the other wallets that we will be comparing today, most of them, I believe, are not full node wallets.
That's correct. Yeah. They don't have their own node built in. You would need to then set it up with a node separately. Yeah.
So which would generally be Bitcoin Core somewhere on a server.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'll jump in with just a couple of points about Bitcoin Core that's good to recognize is that it doesn't have multi-sig functionality at the moment. I'm not sure if they're planning to put that into practice, but anyone who's trying to use multi-sig, which maybe most newbies wouldn't, but maybe intermediate advanced would be looking at multi-signature setups. Bitcoin Core does not have that capability by default or in a user-friendly way yet.
Yeah.
And they also don't have any beginner-friendly way to integrate it with a hardware wallet. It is possible to integrate it with a hardware wallet, but it takes a bit of tinkering and it's a more of a customizable process. So if you're an intermediate or advanced, you could probably get both of those things working. If you're a new user, you'd really just be using it as a node and a hot wallet because it's connected to the internet rather than a hardware wallet integrated.
Yeah. I believe you can do the multi-sig, but you have to go through the terminal, the command line. So that's a bit more advanced.
Correct.
But through the normal kind of user interface, GUI interface, you can do it.
That's right.
I think they are working on that, on
yes.
making that.
And that same goes for the hardware wallet part. It is possible, but yeah, you need to use command line prompts rather than anything else. But I'm sure over time they'll make that into a graphical user interface type feature as well. Any other wallets that we reckon are noteworthy?
Yeah, sure. So another one I've used a few times is Blockstream Green. Mm-hmm. So it's a desktop. It's also available on mobile, but it can be used on desktop wallet by Blockstream, the big Bitcoin company. You might have heard of it. I think it's a kind of a good intermediate wallet in terms of security. It's got pretty good user interface. Have you used it, Justin?
I experimented with it a bit. And am I right in thinking that this is the one that has, it's like a multi-sig setup. So you have two keys. You have both, obviously.
Yeah.
And they have one key on a server, which means if you ever lose your device, you're not actually losing both keys. So if someone steals your device or you lose it, you know that they can't actually spend with the keys on that device. Is that
correct? That's correct. That's it. Yeah. So it is multi-sig, which has that advantage. You kind of, each time you make a transaction, you get kind of like the backup from it. And if you send to your email or whatever, and if you lose your device, you can, Blockstream keeps a server with one key from the multi-sig.
Mm.
So you can go with a backup and retrieve your coins. So yeah, it does have that kind of security feature. And yeah, it's got decent security, I wouldn't say as good as hardware wallets, but it's easier to use than hardware wallets. It's a good kind of intermediate level between decent security and a good user interface. One disadvantage is because of the multi-sig, the fees can be a bit higher, especially right now. It's not a problem, but if sometimes when the fees were on the network were high, the multi-sig, it's a bigger transaction size, so it means the fees are higher. But it's a decent kind of wallet.
Absolutely. And am I right in thinking that with Taproot, in the fullness of time, once that's integrated, that will reduce some of the fees for multi-sig because Taproot tries to aggregate some of that data?
I think it might reduce it a little bit,
But it'll still be more expensive than a traditional.
I believe so. It would still be, multi-sig would still be a bit more expensive than a normal transaction.
Makes sense.
It's a wallet I recommend to people if they invested, you know, like some of money, like maybe $2,000 or something, and they don't want to invest in a hardware wallet, but they don't want to keep it in some kind of very insecure mobile wallet. It's that kind of intermediate wallet.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I might throw out another wallet that I've only used a little bit. I'm just putting it out there because I think it's incredibly user-friendly. It's called Lily Wallet.
Mm-hmm.
So this is only a desktop wallet. It's not mobile, but it's a Windows, Mac, or Linux. And it's cool because it's not free open source software in the traditional sense. It is source viewable, so you're still able to see the source. So it's auditable by the community and adversaries. But it's good because it can either be a hot wallet. You can link it to a hardware wallet like Coldcard or Trezor or Ledger. You can have multi-signature functions as well. And it also allows you to connect to your own node and also to have things like Tor connectivity. However, the part that I don't like about it is that those last two things, connecting to your own node or Tor connectivity, it's a premium feature. So you have to pay for that ability to use it in the wallet. So I wouldn't recommend people do that because there are wallets that are free, which have those features. However, if you're completely brand new and you don't care about things like Tor connectivity or running your own node yet, then Lily Wallet is actually a very user-friendly. It really kind of abstracts away too much of the complexity and just presents you with the basics of what you need to understand a Bitcoin wallet as a new user, whether it's a hot wallet you're using or linked up to a hardware wallet to make it more like a cold wallet. So Lily Wallet, really cool. Not many people talk about it, but it's useful to check out. But again, as you start to move to intermediate, you'll probably drop that for a more advanced wallet, I would say.
Okay, so the use case for Lily Wallet is for beginners?
Just making it super easy. That's why they have a premium model to say, hey, look, if you want to connect your own node, we can handhold you through that whole process. Mm-hmm. Or if you want to run Tor, we can handhold you through the whole process, but you have to pay. It's a subscription fee, which, to be honest, I can't recall. It is an ongoing fee. It's not like a one-off fee. I can't recall if it's monthly or yearly, but you end up paying a small amount, which, again, I don't think is that useful, because once you get to that point of wanting to run your own node or connect over Tor, I think it's accessible enough once you're at that point you want to do it. And if you've got the motivation to do it, you can learn that relatively easily. And there's a lot of other wallet software that will let you do it, you know, relatively straightforwardly. But for new users, it's probably a bit too much, which is why Lily Wallet might be a nice little in-between just to get started.
So if we were to write it, in terms of usability, it would be high usability.
Yes.
And in terms of security, you'd say like moderate security.
Moderate security, that right. Yeah. That's right, because you're still using someone else's node. Essentially, you have to connect to a public node. And of course, there's no Tor connectivity, which means unless you're using a VPN, whichever node you're connecting to would know things like your IP address, basically. Okay. So not the best for privacy or for security, but a good place to start for just saying, I have no idea about desktop wallets. Okay. Give me one that's got some decent features, a bit more than Bitcoin Core, and that's a good intermediary.
Yeah. Okay.
I've got another one that is my main recommended wallet, and that is Sparrow Wallet. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'll just rattle off some of the features that I like about it. Firstly, it's good to mention that if you're a new user and you try to use Sparrow Wallet, it will be overwhelming because Craig Raw is his name, the creator of Sparrow Wallet. He made it for himself initially, wanting to make sure he has all the possible utility, all the possible features, and all the possible visibility that you should have in a wallet, rather than having a lot of that complexity abstracted away. So what that means is new users looking at it, there's a lot of features that they'll never use. There's a lot of features they'll never understand. So it can be overwhelming. However, their documentation, their help docs are becoming very, very user-friendly. And so if you give it a bit of time, it does become something that the learning curve is, I would say, steep if you get into the advanced features, but it's pretty low if you're just staying on the basic functionality. But the things I like about it, it's free open source software. Can either be a hot wallet where you just connect directly to like your seed phrase in the internet, or it can be like a cold slash, you know, hardware wallet integrated with Cold Card, Trezor, or Ledger. You can have it as a watch only wallet, which means that you can see the transactions coming in and out of your hardware wallet, but you can't actually sign those transactions with Sparrow Wallet. What you would need to do is create like a transaction, put it into your hardware wallet, sign it with the hardware wallet, and then use Sparrow to transmit it. So that way you're never actually putting your seed phrase onto Sparrow Wallet, even if you're integrating it with your hardware wallet. It's also got multi-sig options. It's got Tor integrated in a really user-friendly way, just like click a button. It's got coin control features. So again, you can choose the UTXOs that you want to send. You can label them to make it clear what they were used for or what you'd like to use them for in future. You can do things like batch sends. So you can send a UTXO to multiple parties. There's privacy transactions that are integrated as well. So they use Samurai Wallet's Whirlpool mixing implementation. They also have BIP47 PayNIMs, which are like reusable stealth addresses. The only other wallet to have that at the moment is Samurai Wallet. But Blue Wallet, another wallet, is looking at integrating them too, which kind of just makes them more user-friendly. Anyway, point with all this is that they're a very privacy-focused wallet, relatively accessible for newbies, but they have everything that you would ever need, really, as an advanced user with a wallet, as long as you don't mind going through help documents from time to time to figure out how to use it.
Okay. So if we were to summarize it, again, I haven't used this one, but from what you're saying, moderate usability.
Yes.
Good privacy.
Yes, definitely.
Yep. Can be good security.
Yes, definitely.
And very feature-rich.
Feature-rich, absolutely feature-rich. It's probably the most feature-rich wallet that I've seen. Even for an advanced user, you'll find there are features in there that you probably would never have considered in another wallet, which is cool. But at the same time, again, for new users, can be a bit overwhelming, admittedly.
Okay. Well, so that kind of maybe brings us to another wallet I'd want to mention, which seems similar, Electrum.
Yes.
So for those who aren't aware, Electrum is also one of the oldest Bitcoin wallets. I would kind of call it like the Swiss knife of wallets. Again, it has a lot of features, a lot of possibilities. It's not very user-friendly, but there's a lot of things you can do with it. So it's more for advanced users. But it seems the wallet, the Sparrow wallet you mentioned, it seems kind of similar to Electrum. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. And I've got a bit of trivia for Electrum, or maybe like a bit of a story that leads to some trivia. We had a Christmas party last year, and Jeremy, one of the other staff at Hardblock, he kind of created this a game or a puzzle for us, and the prize was a seed phrase, and the seed phrase led to some sats, obviously. However, he created a seed phrase which was more like a brain wallet, so it wasn't a BIP. I always get the BIPs mixed up, but BIP 37 or BIP 39, like the usual seed phrase that you prepare. It has a checksum at the end, so like that last word can only be of a few different things. I think it's of possible six different words. Anyway, he created a seed phrase that wasn't compliant with that. It was just, it uses the correct words from the word list, but there was no checksum at the end. Anyway, point being is that trying to restore that in a wallet was near impossible. I put it through about 12 different wallets, including desktop and mobile wallets, and none of them would let me restore it because it saw it as an incompatible seed phrase because it wasn't BIP 37 or BIP 39, whichever it is. However, Electrum would let me restore it. It does tell you this is not a BIP 37 or BIP 39 compliant seed phrase. Would you still like to restore? You click yes. It looks through and says, we found a UTXO. It's got some sats in here. So Electrum, very, very useful. It's also very, very easy to link to your own node or a public node. So it is, that the Swiss Army knife. Mm. And I just like the simplistic user face that it has as well. Doesn't waste space.
So is there any advantage of Sparrow compared to Electrum or vice versa? Because they seem very similar.
Yeah, I would say the main difference is that Sparrow Wallet gives you all those privacy features. So it has a coin join, has like single party, multi-party coin joins. It has a coin join mixing service. Yeah. It has Paynim integration as well. It also has really simple features where you can do like replace by fee. So say, for example, if you send Bitcoin to the wrong address and you've used a low transaction fee, you can then go put in another replacement transaction with a higher fee to the correct address, and that is the transaction that will be mined and made permanent on the blockchain, whereas your original accidental one will be basically orphaned. It won't go through, which has saved a few users before. Not many wallets have that feature, whereas Sparrow makes it as simple as a click. So you see a transaction that's pending, you can click it and replace by fee and send it to a new address instead.
But I believe Electrum does have that.
They do have that too. Look, I haven't used that that functionality.
I could be wrong. I'm not like an expert Electrum user, but I would have thought
they have that too. Yeah,
I could be wrong, but I think
you're probably quite right. But I guess so to me, it's the privacy stuff, the privacy features of Sparrow, and because does Electrum have multi-sig and hardware wallet integration too? It would have hardware for sure, but does it have multi-sig?
Yeah, I believe so. Again, I'm not actually an expert Electrum user, but I believe it does.
Well, they're probably both very similar in that way. And if you don't care so much about the privacy, like coin join features, then Electrum is probably going to work just as well as Sparrow, because I'd imagine it would have things like batched sends as well, coin control, which is really what, as an intermediate or advanced user, you probably want in a wallet. If you don't care about the privacy part, it's things like batch spends, coin control, coin labeling, perhaps Tor connectivity, ability to connect to your own node. And Electrum certainly has that. Any other desktop wallets before we move on to mobile?
Well, maybe just real quick, I'd like one wallet I have used is Wasabi, and it's a privacy-focused wallet. Again, it's got a very kind of bare basics UI, which can be good. Some people like it, some people don't like it. And it's focused up on privacy and mixing. It has been reasonably popular. Probably Wasabi and Samurai were the two kind of services used for privacy and mixing coins. However, there has been recently, there's been controversies with both of them, but recently especially there was some controversy with Wasabi, with them doing some, being forced to blacklist some addresses. Maybe you can explain more about that.
Absolutely. So this was all just within the past 24 hours. So ZK Snacks is a company that researches privacy for Bitcoin. Their main product is Wasabi Wallet. So ZK Snacks is also the coordinator of Wasabi Wallet's CoinJoin mixing implementation. So what that means in like a less technical way is that if you try to mix through Wasabi's CoinJoin implementation, it would go to a central coordinator, which is run by ZK Snacks. And that coordinator, it's blinded, so they shouldn't know the details of like who you are and where your pre-mix and post-mix coins, how they link up. It shouldn't know those things, and that's not in question. However, because there is a centralized coordinator, there is the ability, if that coordinator wants to blacklist certain UTXOs. And so what came out last night was that their legal team, ZK Snacks, has made a decision that there are going to be UTXOs that they'll now blacklist and essentially block them from being able to use the Wasabi CoinJoin implementation. Now, they haven't been clear of why that is, although with what's going on in the world at the moment with, say, the Canadian protests and the Russia and Ukraine war and the sanctions that are occurring, as well as recent sanctions with Iran and Venezuela. Sorry, not recent sanctions, but the recent activity around Ethereum and MetaMask blocking transactions to or from IPs that are Iranian or Venezuelan. This, to me, would probably fit in pretty well with Wasabi's announcement of saying we're going to be blocking certain UTXOs, which means, you know, you can kind of tell privacy is under attack when certain IP addresses or UTXOs with certain history become blacklisted from using a privacy enhancing or privacy maintaining service. As maybe a little bit of trivia, because it is a free open source project, a couple of people are going to fork it. So there's already one that's called Wasabi BTC, which essentially uses the exact same Wasabi wallet, but they've set up their own centralized coordinator and they've said they will never blacklist UTXOs. So if people want to keep using Wasabi's CoinJoin implementation, that the mixing implementation that is, they're able to do it by just pointing their Wasabi wallet at a different coordinator. Now, that does come with some privacy risks. The less people using a certain coordinator, the more easy it is to perhaps de-anonymize and determine who is using it. But over time, if people start to migrate to one of these new sort of forked services, you would say that would give you some good enough privacy. Again, not getting into all of the arguments about the, you know, which is the better mixing implementation, because there is a lot of criticism about Wasabi's mix implementation, that it can be de-anonymized or demixed. But I think, to be honest, for most users, if you're trying to get yourself a bit of privacy from, say, spending at like a coffee shop, or, you know, if you get paid in sats and you want to obfuscate that from your employer, or you want to send your mate some Bitcoin, you don't want them showing your, you know, seeing your transaction history, Wasabi's mixing implementation, I would say, is good enough for that. You know, if you're trying to get away from a state actor like the CIA or the ASIO or something, Wasabi's not going to be good enough. But
okay.
Do you have any points on that one, Daniel?
No, that's a good explanation.
So we might as well move on to mobile wallets. We've got a couple mobile wallets that I wanted to talk about that are really useful, I think, for new users. So one of them is Blue Wallet, which is a free open source software again. It has both on-chain and Lightning Network capability. It can be a watch-only wallet. So if you have a hardware wallet, like a Trezor or a Cold Card, you can have Blue Wallet set up to just watch the transactions go in and out, but not be able to actually use the seed. You can, of course, use it to construct transactions and then have your Cold Card or your Trezor sign the transaction and then broadcast that transaction with the Blue Wallet. So it is able to do partially signed Bitcoin transactions. That feature is often called. It's got multi-sig setup options. It's got coin control, coin labeling, batch spending. You can connect to your own full node, whether it's on-chain or Lightning. It's got Tor integrated very easily for some added network level privacy. And they also have a bounty out, a one Bitcoin bounty for the integration of BIP47 PayNIMS, which if you recall from me saying just before, that's what Sparrow Wallet has and that's what Samurai Wallet has. So those are like reusable stealth addresses where you have, say, a handle or a name that doesn't change. But if anyone uses that to send you Bitcoin, it generates a new address that's only known to you and that person. And so the more wallets that have that, the more useful that feature is. For the last 4 or 5 years, or maybe more than that, it's only been Samurai Wallet that's had that. Sparrow Wallet integrated it probably around the last 3 months or so. And Blue Wallet is looking to integrate that soon too. Although there's a lot of advanced features I've just rattled off there, it is a very user-friendly newbie wallet as well, to just set up and have both on-chain and Lightning and be able to use them pretty quickly. Any comments on Blue Wallet?
No, it's a good wallet. It used to be my go-to wallet for MoiBio. I actually moved over to the next wallet we're going to discuss, Moon. That's my kind of new go-to wallet.
That's but previously, M-U-U-N, to use.
Sir?
I said M-U-U-N, to use.
M-U-U-N, yeah. But yeah, I mean, Blue Wallet is still, it's a pretty easy to use wallet. And I guess I would just say in general how I use MoiBio wallets. I don't use a lot of security or complex features if they do have them. For me, if I'm storing Bitcoin, I use some other cold storage solution. But for me, I don't care that much about security on my MoiBio wallets. I usually have a smaller amount of money on them that I use. If there's ever any opportunity to use Bitcoin in a retail setting, I can use it then. Or if I meet somebody and I'm teaching them about Bitcoin, to just give them a small amount of Bitcoin. So for that, I don't keep large amounts. And the most important things for me is really just ease of use, usability. And so I can set somebody up in 5 minutes and give them some Bitcoin. And the only security feature I use is I back up the wallet. So usually there will be a seed phrase or something like that, and I back up the wallet. But Blue Wallet, yeah, it's a pretty simple wallet. It's got Bitcoin and Lightning. So you can create multiple wallets, and when you create the wallet, you can choose whether it's a Bitcoin wallet or a Lightning wallet. But the next wallet has a different solution to that, which I really like, and maybe we can discuss it.
Yeah, definitely. So Moon Wallet has similar to Green Wallet, which it's a multi-sig setup, so a 2 of 2 multi-sig. But Moon Wallet servers have one of those signatures and you have the other signature on the phone. So, of course, with the phone, you can spend. But if someone, say, got the phone, they wouldn't have access to both of those signatures, both of those keys to then restore the wallet elsewhere. You would have to write that down separately. And it's also kind of cool when you sign up that the multi-sig options, it's a bit more user-friendly because they get you to sign up with an email address, with a password, and then you have this sort of recovery, this backup. Which you encrypt with another password. So it's a bit more user-friendly in the sense that there's an email and password attached to it, which probably most new users that are brand new to Bitcoin are probably more familiar with because that's how they sign into most services. I'm not sure if you have to do that. That's just the UI or the flow that I got put through when I signed mine up.
Yeah, but that's correct. I think there's different options to backup, though. There's different options to backup. So you can have an email and password, which can be then kind of used to unlock the wallet. And I think they send you the kind of backup to your email, but I think you can have a seed phrase. I think there's multiple options. I haven't used all of those options, to be honest. But I'll get to the main reason why I like Moon Wallet is that it combines Bitcoin on-chain and Lightning balance, which makes it really easy to use. I don't have to have separate Lightning wallet and separate Bitcoin wallet. In fact, you don't even have to know much about them. And when it sends, when you send Bitcoin, it automatically detects if it's sending to a Bitcoin address or a Lightning address when you scan the QR code. And again, you can receive in Bitcoin or in Lightning and just combines into one balance. So that makes it really easy to use. I really prefer that over Blue Wallet, where I had to have separate balances, and then you have to kind of convert the Lightning. There it's done. It's all combined with the balance, so you can receive your Bitcoin in Lightning, and then you can send it using on-chain. If somebody, you don't have to convert it between the two. It does it automatically behind you. I don't know the exact mechanics of it. There was an interview with Stephen Livera on the Stephen Livera podcast where he interviewed the people behind Moon Wallet, and they described that in more detail, how it works. But It just works and it's really good.
I could jump in there. I've got a little bit of detail about it. So they use something called submarine swaps to go from on-chain to Lightning and quite likely back from Lightning to on-chain. Something that I don't think a lot of users are aware of is that the balance that they see in the wallet, now look, someone who's a technical expert, correct me if I'm wrong, but the balance you see in the wallet is on-chain, even though you can use it for Lightning. And even if you send something from, say, another wallet into the Moon Lightning wallet portion, if you want to call it that, it's actually still on-chain. And they just use submarine swaps to either convert back out to Lightning when you want to send a Lightning transaction, or if you're just spending on-chain, it'll obviously just be an on-chain transaction. So that it seems a bit weird to get your head around. Like if you send, say, from your Blue Wallet Lightning channel or Blue Wallet Lightning portion to your Moon Wallet to a Lightning receiving address, it'll actually be sitting on your Moon Wallet on-chain. Now, that firstly, they explain a little bit of that in some of that Stefan Lavera interview, as well as on some of their recent Twitter posts, because with all of the potential blacklisting and sanctions and so forth, people started asking Moon Wallet, you know, are you a custodial service? If we have sats in your Lightning channel, could that be banned? Could that be removed? Could that be stolen? They said, no, all funds are on chain. So anything you see in your Moon wallet is on chain. Even if you think it's in a Lightning wallet, it's actually on chain. You can spend to a Lightning wallet from there, but it'll just use a submarine swap. And so by doing that, it becomes non-custodial, as in like you self-custody your Bitcoin because it's on chain rather than sitting in someone else's Lightning channel. There is a few moments where it becomes custodial. So I think if you use something called turbo transactions, basically it means that when they're performing the swap to Lightning, it has to use one of their Lightning channels, which means that to some extent you lose custody of that Bitcoin or those sats until they're then paid into wherever you want them paid to. But that's a relatively small window of, I wouldn't even call it insecurity, because if you trust Moon Wallet, then that's only a few seconds of a transaction. But I guess the point there, a bit of trivia, is that even though it looks like you have Lightning network sats in your Moon Wallet, it's actually all on chain, and they just do a bit of technical stuff behind the scenes to swap it back and forth between Lightning or on chain, depending on what you need.
Okay, so if I'm receiving Bitcoin using Lightning on Moon Wallet, I receive it using Lightning, and as soon as I receive it, it gets converted using submarine swaps to on-chain.
That's Bitcoin. Correct. Yep, that's right. Okay. And that, because they have, look, some of the technical details of Lightning sort of escape me, but they don't wait for confirmations, which is how they can make it so quick. Mm-hmm. And the reason behind that is, well, I don't know any way that you would be able to take advantage of that or manipulate that and double spend or anything. They've obviously looked into that well enough, and that there hasn't been any incidences of that either. So they don't wait for the full confirmations, which is why it feels like you're always sending Lightning, because
when they do the submarine swap, they don't wait for
that. That's correct. Yeah. So the submarine swap, if you receive in Lightning and it actually goes into on chain, you don't have to wait for the confirmation for it to show up in your wallet. It'll just show as being there, even though technically on chain, it would only have zero confirmations at that point.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. I wonder what happens if you actually try it. I've never tried this, but if you actually try to immediately send it, if you would actually send, like if I receive on Moon Wallet using Lightning, if I receive some balance, and then I immediately spend using Lightning that entire balance, or even on-chain, would it allow that? I haven't tested it, but maybe there's a possibility you can't spend it
immediately. Sometimes it'll tell you need to wait. So depending on the type of transaction you want to make, it'll say you need to wait because this is an on-chain transaction and requires confirmations. Yeah. Okay. If you were to spend it, that's right. But having it, seeing it in your wallet and feeling like, okay, I've received my money, it doesn't require to wait for that.
Yeah. Well, but again, and all these technical details are kind of behind the scenes.
True.
Just using it, like, you don't even have to know much about it. Just everything works. I haven't had problems, and I really like using it.
Likewise. Look, the wallets I have on my phone are Blue Wallet, Moon Wallet, just because I really like Moon Wallet's functionality. And I think for new users, getting them to sign up a Moon Wallet makes a whole lot of sense. And if they want an extra step, they can go to a Blue Wallet, especially if they want to set it up with their own node or something, because you can't do that with Moon. And the only other wallet I have is Samurai Wallet. which is, I would call, very much an advanced wallet. It has all the features that we discussed earlier with Sparrow. In fact, Sparrow's privacy implementation, so their coin joins or the centralized coin join implementation, that is all based on Samurai Wallet's protocols as well. So it's just a nice way to have almost Sparrow Wallet on a phone, but it's Android only, which is the unfortunate part. So no love for iOS. Well, look, that's most of the wallets that I think are worthwhile for users to consider. And I guess if we want to bring it back to some basics for mobile, probably just inherent in what I just said, Blue or Moon, for most users, that's going to keep you covered. For desktop wallets, what do we think? Like Sparrow for intermediate and advanced. I think your Lily wallet might be good to get you started, but things like Electrum, and we mentioned another one that slipped my mind, Green Wallet. Those are probably good ones to consider, and you're not going to go wrong with any of them, really.
Yeah, I mean, it depends kind of who you are, what's your use case, how technical you are, how much money you want to save using it. But yeah, again, if you just are a reasonable kind of a beginner level and you don't have a huge amount of money, the one I recommend for desktop would probably be Green Wallet.
Yep. Makes sense. And it looked to highlight a point that you sort of touched on there and you mentioned specifically earlier is that, mobile wallet, you would see it as a hot wallet and you would see it as like a spending wallet. It's probably a good way to consider it. It's like put in there what you expect to spend, put in there that you don't expect to lose it, but if you do lose it, it's not going to ruin your life. Whereas anything that is your savings, like your life savings, your long-term, you want that in cold storage. You want that in a hardware wallet that's not connected to the internet, that doesn't travel everywhere with you. When you go to stores or whatever it might be.
Yep.
No worries. I think that's pretty much it. That's probably a good place to end it. If you've got any queries about wallets or if, it feels like there's too many options from what we've just described, please feel free to reach out to us either on Reddit or Twitter, and we're happy to answer questions. So otherwise, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the content or think someone else would benefit from it, please like and share it. And again, reach out to us on Twitter if you have any queries or any content requests. The handle is HardBlockBTC, all one word, HardBlockBTC. Thanks for listening, and until next time.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, Daniel.